Yo, what's good? What's good? Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah K Podcast. Welcome back. So, wow, okay, a lot has transpired this week, this entire week. My previous episode, go check that out. I basically gave my preview, my prediction of the national championship game. Michigan won, as I predicted. I picked Michigan. Prior to the college football season starting, I figured they were the best team in the country. They had the most production coming back out of any of the teams in the country. A lot of their key guys on both sides of the ball came back. Tremendous big time win for Jim Harbaugh. Gets the monkey off his back. But we got a lot to dig into today. I'm gonna break it up. Obviously, we got to talk about Nick Saban retiring, Bill Belichick and the Patriots, Rob Kraft, mutually, quote unquote, parting ways. I'm going to discuss the intel and with all, you know, all what comes with that. Mike Vrabel, it's just so much news going on. Also, the NFL playoffs is this weekend. So we got a lot to really uncover. Like I said, I think I'm gonna do parts to this episode. I'm gonna do part one, part two. I'm not gonna try to cram everything into one episode because we got so much. I think I want to get so much in depth in certain topics. I don't want to mix up, you know, talk about Saban and NFL playoff. Like it's a lot. So. What we're going to do, obviously, we're going to talk about some of the coaching moves that's been made, and I will break down playoff predictions, playoff matchups, so forth, right before the playoffs that's coming up this weekend. So, huge weekend. It's been a huge week in sports. If you love football, it's been all over the place, craziness. Literally from the start on Monday with the national championship game all throughout the week with, you know, NFL teams parting ways with their coaches, firing coaches, coaches retiring, whatever. Okay, we got a lot to get into, but first and foremost, I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah K of the Isaiah K Podcast, IKP. Shouts out to everyone that is listening, that is in full effect with us. Greatly, greatly appreciate it. Greatly appreciate it. I got so much I want to talk about, so much on my mind, so many of these topics. I feel like I just got to unpack for you guys. There's a lot. There's a lot to dig into. And sometimes, when it comes to, content and trying to pull out content for you guys, at times, it can get really hard because nothing is happening. But, you know, I think this week, you know, there's been just breaking news after breaking news after breaking news, and it just topples over each other, and then that just gets my thoughts rambling. I have so many thoughts, so many opinions. The games from week 18, the games coming up in the playoffs, mix it all in, mash it all in with, you know, the coaching carousel and so forth. A lot to really unpack. But we're going to do it one by one. Let's start with Nick Saban retiring. And it does come as a shock. Granted, Nick Saban is he's in his 70s. I think he's early 70s. I think it's like 71, 72. It's a shock. It's a shock, right? You look at the year that he's coming off of. It's definitely a shock. Now, I'm sure you guys have probably heard this. You'll probably continue to hear it the more and more, you know, we talk about Nick Saban. But he's the greatest college football coach ever. Right? Right at the conclusion of the college football season. College football season ended on Monday with a national championship. Like I said, Michigan won the national championship. And Nick Saban comes out. Retires Wednesday, and man, it's just a complete shock. Now, I'm not gonna get into the whole. I'm gonna throw out some stats, some records, or whatever. I'm gonna leave that up to a lot of other people. I'm not gonna do that. I want to talk about his impact, but I am gonna bring up, like, obviously, we all know the 7 national championship rings, 6 championships, 6 natties at Bama, 1 at LSU. His 17 years at Alabama was just pure dominance. Pure dominance. 15 straight years, he reached number 1 in the polls. He's the only coach to win a natty in 3 separate decades. 3 separate decades. Only coach to do it. Obviously, he did it at LSU 2003. He had to transition to the NFL, but came back to the college team. Went to Alabama in year 3, wins national championship, 14-0. So he won a national championship in at least one in the 2000s, obviously LSU and Bama. 2010s, he wins several national championships, and then in 2020 with Mac Jones, you know, and Najee Harris, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, and those guys, he won another his last national championship, which put him past the great Bear Bryant at 7. So 7 national championships. I mean, and it's a true testament to his greatness. After what we're looking at it now, like literally with the exclusion of year 1, with the exclusion of his first year, he's had 10 plus wins every year at Bama. 87 win percentage at Bama, 87 win percentage. He won 87% of his games, 29 losses in 17 seasons. So truly, truly remarkable career at Bama. Like I said, I'm not going to do the whole stat thing, but I found a couple interesting ones. I want to talk more about his impact on the sport, right? Like, obviously, when you think of Nick Saban, you think of winner, the ultimate winner, right? The ultimate winner. He is the standard. He is the blueprint, right? He's that. He is that. He's been that for college football, and he will continue to be that, right? Like, there's a lot of young, up-and-coming, great coaches who I really like. Obviously, you guys know I've been rooting for Jim Harbaugh for years. I think he's awesome. Kirby Smart, he already has 2 national championships under his belt. You know, Dan Lanning at Oregon. I like Sark at Texas. I like Kalen DeBoer at Washington, obviously. You know, Ohio State with Ryan Day. There's some really good operations and programs all across the country. And Saban has remained as the standard. And as great as those guys, as I named, I highly doubt that 7 national championships is just crazy. Like, it's an amazing feat. Kirby, I think Kirby's going to dominate the sport with, like, you know, he got his run going on at Georgia. I think he's going to dominate the sport for years to come. My guess, I think Kirby ends up winning probably about another 2-3 national championships. I think Kirby probably ends with, if you told me the over-under Kirby Smart 3.5 national championships, I'll take the over. I think he's going to win probably another 1, probably another 2 or 3, right? But 7? I don't know. I don't think he gets to 7. That's just a different type of dominance. And he's dominated this sport to a degree that we have never seen with Nick Saban. We've never seen someone dominate the sport for such a long period of time in the essence that he has done it. And it's going, and now with the direction of the, you know, expanded playoff and NIL and the transfer portal and conference realignment, I think it's going to be merely impossible with just the new landscape of college football and how it operates. I just don't think we're going to see of a 15-plus year run like we saw Saban just rattle off. I don't think we see that. I genuinely do not think we see that again. because the way how college football is just shifting, there's so many changes. There's so many loops and hula hoops you have to jump through. I think it's crazy, right? So that type of dominance probably won't be repeated. So that in itself makes him an icon and speaks to the impact. But more on Nick Saban's impact. He has become the face of not just the SEC, but college football, but the SEC and what it has become in the past decade and a half, over the past 15 years since, I would like to say, since Saban has taken this jump over the past 15 to 20 years, what the SEC has become, they've become this super conference. And I say this with respect, but in a lot of ways, Nick Saban has built, or at least has been at the center of what we know the SEC as today. What we know the SEC as today, and what the SEC has been doing over the past 15 to 20 years in terms of their national dominance, whether that's in recruiting class, being able to land the biggest stars and the biggest high school players and so forth, winning national championships. That all stems from what Nick Saban has been able to do at Alabama. I just don't think there's no way around it. And I'm not saying, like, before Saban, before he was before he got to LSU, the conference was not seen as the dominant or the best conference in college football. It just wasn't. It was not revered in that light. Now, did the SEC have some great teams and great coaches? Absolutely. They always had really good teams, great coaches, Steve Spurrier, right? They had some really good teams that won national championships and had one bid, like Tennessee and Florida, like I said, Steve Spurrier, right? But absolutely great teams and great coaches. But he is responsible for everyone chasing after him, and with whether that's in the SEC and all throughout the country. He set the standard, and it's the reason why the SEC is the conference. It is what it is today. Saban's dominance had programs like LSU under Les Miles, and then after Les Miles, Ed Orgeron, Auburn, Georgia, Florida. All of those teams have won national championships over the past course of the past 15 years. All of those teams have won national championships. But the one common thing, they all had to come and beat Alabama to get over that hump. Alabama was that hump, and they have forever, they've forever been the standard. Like I said, whether it's LSU, whether it was Auburn, Georgia, Florida, that they had to, in order to win national championships, they had to beat Bama. That is the common denominator. That's the common denominator. No matter how you shape it up, in order for LSU to represent the SEC West in the SEC championship game, probably had to beat Bama. Same thing goes for Auburn. The years that Auburn, it's like lightning in a bottle for Auburn, right? When everything goes right for Auburn and they win their 10-11 games, they get to the national championship and they're able, like the Cam Newton year, they're able to win the national championship. Gus Malzahn. They had to beat Alabama in order to get there. Same thing goes for Georgia and Florida. Once they got to the SEC championship, they respectfully won the SEC East. once they got to the SEC championship, who was in their pathway? Alabama and Nick Saban. So what we know, that has kind of shaped what we know college football to be today. And like I said, other conferences chase it. Other conferences chase it and has been chasing it ever since Bama, ever since Nick Saban has gotten to Bama and what he's been able to do at Bama, right? And the great thing, the remarkable thing about it, the reason why that's so huge in terms of when we talk about impact, you know, NFL is king, but the second most popular sport or the second most watched sport in America is college football. And I think a lot of that, I'm not going to say all of it, right? I think the sport has become very much popular nationally. I think, and when you think of college football, it's typically regional, right? It's typically regional. Like if you're from the North, you're probably into a lot of Big Ten football. And it's Michigan, Ohio State, Notre Dame, right? Penn State, whatever. If you out West, it's probably Oregon, USC, and Washington, cool, right? If you're down south, or if you're in the Midwest, it's probably Oklahoma or Texas. And if you're in the South, you guys don't even, it just matters more to you guys. It just matters more to you guys. But college football is typically, throughout its history, it's very regional and it has regional bias. But I think some of the emergence of college football, I think it would have to, it would be remiss of anyone to think that, hey, after the NFL, NFL is king. But after, when you think about college football, when you think about the most watched sports after the NFL, college football falls right under that umbrella. And a big reason for that is the SEC being nationally recognized, and that is due to Nick Saban. So his impact and his regard and his fingerprints on not just the SEC as a conference and as they become very dominant and we look at them in certain light, but then it has had a carryover effect and it's had ripple effects throughout other conferences and eventually throughout the country. And it doesn't matter if you're down south, up north, or out west, you can't miss an SEC matchup. You can't miss a bona fide SEC matchup. And a lot of that is due to Nick Saban. Kind of shows how special he is. But then, it's like this for every sport. Every sport has maybe a figure or several key players or coaches that elevate the sport. Like in the NBA in the 80s, you know, the business acumen and the business aspect from it, it wasn't a thriving business until Magic Bird came. They saved the league. And then in the 90s, Jordan just took it to a whole nother level. And then we had guys follow after Jordan. They pass it, they get the baton and they take it to greater lengths, like a Kobe Bryant, like a Shaquille O'Neal, right? Then a LeBron James, then a Steph Curry, then so forth and so forth. So the NFL, it happened in the NFL where NFL always been pretty popular, right? But then, like in the late 80s, going into the 90s with the Cowboys dominating, the 49ers dominating, the Giants were pretty good. You know, Then you got the Packers with Brett Favre, the, you know, Fox, they get the NFL. And then it's just been up from that point on. Then from that point on, you got Peyton, you got Brady. It's a revolving door in every sport, at least in North America, the popular, you know, there is a figure or key figures, players and coaches that take the sport to a whole nother level, it benefits everyone that's involved. And that is Nick Saban. He is that to college football. He is that to college football, right? Saban was he was really good at adapting. I think it's an underrated skill that doesn't get talked about enough, especially with older coaches, right? we knock Bill Belichick because of his coaching disciples out of his out of his coaching tree typically don't do well. They don't do well after leaving him. Well, that's damn near the complete opposite with Saban. He literally changes careers. Nick Saban's with the coordinators, the coaches that he has hired, it like starting from Jim McElwain, it is like football rehabilitation. It's like football rehab, right? Like think of Steve Sarkisian and Sark is doing it. Sark had a hell of a year at Texas, but think about where Steve Sarkisian was when he took the job at Alabama. Right, we all know about his substance abuse problem and so forth, and Sark, that's a really good feel good story. That's a really good feel good story. And Sark, real, damn good football coach, damn good offensive minded guy, right? But from the from Steve Sarkisian and Jim McElwain and Lane Kiffin and Bill O'Brien and Mel Tucker and obviously Kirby Smart, Mike Locksley and at Maryland, right? Head coaches, like these guys turn around and become head coaches, and like it's like football rehab. He does it. He takes a chance. He takes a gamble, and it's like football rehab. But I think this year, you really can't put a premium on what Saban was able to do this year. Because I was talking to a guy, and he's really deep into the college football world, especially down in the SEC. And I, like, it was an 8-win team. He told me it was like this is max 8-win team. That's the cap. 8-win team. And I like Alabama this year, for them to go SEC champs, you know, Saban has kind of owned Kirby Smart. Like he's giving Kirby Smart all what he can handle in those head-to-head matchups. Saban usually gets the best out of him. And Saban a lot of times comes out on the winning side of that head-to-head matchup between Kirby Smart. And this year was another prime example of it. Kirby, Georgia was the better team. Georgia, if Georgia play Alabama 10 more times, they play each other 10 times, Georgia would probably win 7-8 more. Like, they would probably win 7 out of 8 times. That's just the fact. They'll probably win 8 out of the 10 games. And you know, what do you know? Bama won. They won the SEC. This is supposed to be a down year. And like I said, you can't really put a premium on, okay, obviously, those years when he won national championships and they finished off the season as champions, right, it's kind of hard to top that. But when you're able to produce at a level that wasn't expected, or you don't have the talent, you can't really put a premium on that. Like, Sean McVay, he won his Super Bowl, but this year, what he did with the Rams, making them a playoff team, a lot of people are picking the Rams to beat the line. Like, it remarkable. And that's why they get paid the big bucks. That's why you pay a premium for those type of coaches, where you're not expected to be great, but somehow you overcome. Like this year, Saban, he overcame offensive line issues. He didn't have, like, at receiver, he didn't have Devontae Smith or Amari Cooper, Jalen Waddle or Julio Jones. He didn't have that. He didn't have that type of talent at the receiver spot. He didn't have pros, guys that's going to be playing on Sundays at the receiver spot. You know, Jalen Milroe, you know, he could left a lot to be desired at the quarterback spot, right? Didn't have his lockdown defenses, and he don't have the Patrick Surtains, right, or the Trayvon Diggs or the Will Anderson. He didn't have that type of high end talent this year. And the mere fact that he gave Michigan everything that they could handle, and it took the drive of Jim Harbaugh's life, of JJ, it took the drive of JJ McCarthy's life to save Michigan in that predicament. Take it to overtime, like, completely remarkable career for Nick Saban. And you just can't, like I said, you can't put a premium on those, on that type of stuff. So football world will totally miss Nick Saban, the great Nick Saban. College football, obviously, he will be missed. It just won't be the same. I know people, you know, like now, you know, Saban's leaving or retiring, I should say. The Alabama job is open. How crazy is that? In the same year, in the same coaching cycle, there's a possibility that the Michigan job could be open, and now the Alabama job is open. Like, how ironic is that? Two blue blood programs, two high-end programs, two high-end brands made the playoff. Michigan won a national championship. The Michigan job could be open. The Bama job is already open. You know, I know everybody's throwing out, you know, Dan Lanning and Lane Kiffin. You know, Lane Kiffin is the obvious choice. I think Georgia's defensive coordinator, there's some buzz there. Sark, I know some people mentioned Sark. Sark isn't going to leave Texas, right? Like, Texas going to the SEC. He got the same resources he would have at Alabama. He has at Texas, if not more. Right? Like, I don't think Sark is leaving Texas. You know, a lot of people are throwing out Kalen DeBoer. I like Kalen DeBoer. I like Kalen DeBoer a lot. I'm not sure. He's not a Southern guy. Not sure if the Bama, I would like to see him get a job like that, but I'm not sure about the fit. I think if the Michigan job became open, I think that'd be a better fit for Kalen DeBoer to take the Michigan job if it became available and Jim Harbaugh decided to go to the NFL. I think Kalen DeBoer would be a better fit for Michigan versus Alabama. Dan Lanning at Oregon, like I said, similar to Sark at Texas, kind of feel like Dan Lanning has kind of found his way there at Oregon. And like I said, NIL recruiting, they recruit at a high level. They got NIL down pack. Similar resources, like, right, the resources they got at Alabama, they have at Oregon, and in some instances, probably more, because that's Nike and that's Field Night money. So, you know, I don't think, and Dan Lanning, he announced that he's not leaving Oregon, right? Like, that's it's a pretty sweet gig. So he's not leaving Oregon no time soon. Like I said, the obvious one is Lane Kiffin. He's already in the SEC. He's very familiar with Alabama. You know, I think that would be the easy hire. But who knows? Who in the hell would want to, like, who would want a Bama job? The Bama job is great. But you'll literally be replacing Nick Saban. How do you replace Nick Saban? You can't, right? You can't replace Nick Saban. You can't replace Nick Saban. So that's kind of crazy. Kind of funny. But interesting that the Michigan job could be available. The Alabama job is already available. But like I said, Nick Saban, wonderful career. He'll be missed. A driven, hard-nosed, hard-ass winner. I mean, all-time great. Like I said, the greatest college football coach ever. Nick Saban, that's what we have. Great adapter. Great. I mean, just think about it. And the interesting thing I started thinking about, I'm like, Saban, not only did he win a national championship, or he won national championships in three separate decades, but he did it differently. Like, at his first national championship at Bama, it was defense and running game and so-so quarterback play, but it was like great defense, great defensive line, great offensive line play, you know, being able to run the football, smash mouth football. And then as, you know, the game evolved and, you know, more spread out, and it's about receivers and, you know, creative play calling. Like I said, he had the wherewithal to hire creative play callers like a Lane Kiffin, like a Steve Sarkisian, right? then you saw this shift where it wasn't just Smash Mouth football and no. He started to he always had one great receiver like Amari Cooper or a Calvin Ridley or a Julio Jones. But then he started recruiting at a different level, and he would get a Jerry Jeudy and a Jalen Waddle and a Devontae Smith all on one team. And it just, the way he won his national championships was just different. It became different. He, you know, electrifying, you know, cornerback play and DB play with great quarterback play, vertical play, being able to score 40 points and winning shootouts in these national championship games. So just the evolution of it, really true at adapting, ever evolving with the times and being able to stay consistent with the success. Really good, really great career, like a great career from Nick Saban. Okay, so after, you know, just got done with Nick Saban, let's move on to Bill Belichick. And Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll, they were, it said, you know, both mutually parted ways, but in other words, they were fired. They were fired, and, you know, they got the, you know, the respect that they deserve. Pete, I think what he coached in Seattle for, 14, 15 years, like, you know, those guys get the respect that they deserve. Belichick, obviously, with New England for 23 seasons. That's as old as me. Like, literally older than me. He's been coaching the Patriots longer than I've been living. So, you know, total change. I'm not going to say it comes as a shock. I think a lot of people kind of saw this coming, myself included. I'm not say pushing the envelope for Belichick to get fired, but since Tom left and the Patriots they've had like a drop off, I started to question and wonder, hey, when is the right time? When is it the right time to move off of Belichick? Right. Right, when is the right time? How is it done, and so forth? So at this point, it wasn't about was it going to happen. It was more the question of the hour was more of when it was going to happen. It was inevitable that it was always going to happen, and this is you in professional sports. Whether you're a player, whether you're a coach, it usually ends like this. Kind of ends bad. Just like this. All-time great players, it usually ends bad like this. Right? It just happens like that. That's just how it happens. It's very rare when you can go out like Nick Saban, you know, you overachieve, you win the SEC, you get to the playoff, you're going toe-to-toe with the eventual national champions. Usually don't end like that, right? Everybody can't go out like John Elway, right? Even Peyton Manning, he won a Super Bowl, but Peyton Manning, it was just atrocious to watch. He just wasn't the same guy. Just was not the same guy physically. Drew Brees just was not the same guy physically, like, at all. He was, I've been watching Drew Brees his last couple seasons, and he looked shot. And now, you know, he can't even throw the damn football with his kids. Like, it just happens like that. You know, Eli, it ended, you know, Tom, granted, he won a Super Bowl in, you know, Tampa. And if he wanted to, he could probably still play. He'd probably be a top half quarter, top 15, top 16 quarterback. But Tom went out that Dallas playoff game. He threw the ball like 50 plus times. Like, it just, you know. The professional sports usually ends like this. You know, Willie Mays on the Mets, right? I know some people are old enough to remember that. So Willie Mays on the Mets, I'm not. But it just happens. It just happens like that. And that's what it is with Belichick. And for some time, I have been a critic. I thought it was really arrogant of him to put Joe Judge and Matt Patricia. He hired those. Oh well, he named those guys as offensive play callers, offensive coordinator last year. I thought that was really ignorant of him, or I should say arrogant. And you know, his Belichick's ability to adapt to the new age offensive personnel and having issues with picking the correct offensive personnel in 2023 and just not having a good feel for offense in 2023 or in 2024. Like it just wasn't up to par. Right. And his defense was still good. That's what I say. Like Belichick, he didn't get dumber. He didn't get dumb. That really happens with like Belichick, especially Belichick. He is an academic. He's a genius. He's a defensive genius. His defenses are still up to par to this day. Patriots suck. Patriots was ass this year. They were butt cheeks. 10 cans of ass. 4-pack of ass. They were not good this year. But defense was still playing at a really good level. Stop the run. They didn't give up big explosive plays. Like they made you beat. You had to beat them defensively. But offense, they just had no chance. And you knew that every game going into, you knew offensively, you were probably wondering, if you were a Patriots fan, you was probably wondering, who's gonna show up for us today on offense? Like, what are we gonna get on offense today? You didn't know what you were getting. And that's the sad part. And similar to Pete Carroll, I kind of talked about this. I think it was after the Cowboys game, and I basically talked about Pete Carroll kind of alluding to his future. But I was like, hey, I basically said, hey, if Pete wants to stick around, he's gonna have to, he's gonna have to adapt with the times. He's gonna have to adapt a little bit. Granted, looking back at it, the Russell Wilson move wasn't as bad, and it's not as crazy as in the moment as we thought it all was. Like, wow, Seattle really got rid of Russell Wilson. Looking back at it, it wasn't the worst idea, right? They got a lot of draft compensation for it, and they hit on those picks. But Pete is a defensive guy, and simply his defenses haven't been good, right? He slammed the table for Jamal Adams. Like, remember when Jamal Adams used to be like a good player? Like, I'm old enough to remember, there were conversations being had about Jamal Adams being one of the best safeties in football, one of the best defensive players in football. And now he's just like, now he's a liability. He's a liability. He's the Seahawks version of James Bradbury. Like, he can't cover a goddamn thing. So I don't know. Pete defenses, he failed to adapt with the times. A lot of his really good high-end players were on offense. It was just time. And that's what it is. Not every firing is the same. I tell you guys this all the time. Not every coaching firing is the same. It's easy to fire guys like Brandon Staley, right? Brandon Staley, after that playoff disappointment versus the Jaguars, he was a dead man walking, and he knew it. He was a dead man walking, right? Josh McDaniels, it's not hard to fire a guy like that. It's not hard to fire a guy like that when the locker room is collapsing and the players don't mess with him. It ain't hard to fire a guy like that, right? Ron Rivera, coming into the season, he knew he was in the hot seat. He knew he was in the hot seat. And it went poorly this year. It went poorly this year, and he got fired. They showed him the door, right? Right? these dudes don't get press conferences. Charges fired. They fired Brandon Staley. We don't want to ever hear you or see you ever again. Take your money. Goodbye. That's what it is, right? But with these types of firings, when it comes to firing guy, when the Eagles, I remember when the Eagles fired Andy Reid, right? It's a little bit harder, right? Like I said, Pete Carroll, Belichick, for both situations and where both of these franchises are, it was time for those franchises to move on, right? Belichick, old. Well, I'm not gonna say old, but he is old. But older, rigorous, grumpy. I just got done talking about Nick Saban and how Nick Saban was so good at adapting with the times, and you know, some of his championships were won differently. You know, like I said, he won certain championships with defense and running the football. He won other championships with throwing it over the top and a lot of vertical play and skill guys. He had the best skill guys in the country, right? Belichick, just the resentment and him failing to adapt with the times, or him just having, or lacking, I should say, lacking self-awareness. Or like, hey, I am not great at picking offensive personnel. Maybe I should get some help, right? Or Pete, like, hey, I'm supposed to be this defensive mastermind, but my defenses are trash. Like, right? Like, that self-awareness, right? When you make money, like, and like I said, Pete Carroll, Belichick, they're making $15, $20 million. I'm sure Belichick making close to $20 million. I think it's closer to $20-25 than it is $15. Pete probably make about $15 million. Like, these are really lucrative jobs, but it was time. And Belichick, he's an all-time great coach. He's definitely the best coach of my generation. And many would argue the best coach of all time. But once he law, and I'm not gonna get into the whole who was it Brady or was it Belichick? I'm not gonna get into that nonsense, right? I'm not gonna do that. But I do think once Brady left and Belichick was forced to get rid of his succession plan, like a Jimmy Garoppolo, that was his succession plan, but he was forced to give him up and trade him away. Once that happened and Tom left, all bets were off and you could have canceled Christmas. Like, Mac Jones, I knew Mac Jones. I knew it from when he got drafted and he came out that tunnel. I knew he was going to call somebody their job. I knew it. I knew it from that night when he got drafted by the Patriots at 15, coming out that tunnel with that walk, with that smirk. I knew he was going to call somebody their job. And that's just what it is. That's just what it is. I mean, Belichick, you know, like I said, I don't think he got dumber as the years went on. I don't think he just got dumb. I don't think he went stupid. I don't think he just forgot all of his football marbles and knowledge. I think the game passed him. And we see this all the time with, like, basketball coaches and, you know, college basketball coaches and so forth. The game evolves, right? Right? You're older. You're rigid. You made a lot of money. You've had success. With older people that have money and they've had success, and they have been used to doing it their way. You know the saying, can't teach a old dog new tricks. Well, that's very much relevant with coaching and these older coaches. And as the game evolves, can't teach a old dog new tricks. And that's what it is with Belichick. And with, like I said, with Pete, I think Seattle will be fine. They have a really good front office. A really good front office that will know how to navigate and, you know, in terms of their coaching process and continue to, you know, draft pretty well. But it was just time for Pete. And Pete, he's special in a sense because he's one of the few coaches that he's one of the best football coaches in history, NFL and pro, because he was able to do it at both levels. At a high level, at a really high level. College, he did it at college and pro, and he did it at a really high level. So you got to give him his props for that. And like I said, Belichick is always going to be Belichick. Defensive mastermind, right? But if beware, like if you're the Falcons, if you're, you know, I think the Commanders, they're saying they're out on Belichick, whatever. But if you're the Falcons and you're interested in hiring Bill Belichick, hey, beware. Like, make sure Josh McDaniels is along for the tag along, right? So you can get the offensive thing right. Because Belichick has struggled at least over the past half decade, or a little bit more than over the past half decade, in terms of drafting and recognizing and, you know, like developing offensive, curating offensive talent as the game has evolved, right? Right. So that's just what it is. But yeah, those guys, those franchises are moving on. I thought it was kind of fitting. Each press conference looked different. Belichick was in a suit. Pete Carroll was in a hoodie, and he was in a pullover and a hoodie, and it kind of fits the two characters, you know, Northeastern, you know, suited and booted in a suit, and then you got Pete Carroll, West Coast guy in a hoodie, kind of made sense. It matched the two characters and the two personalities, but that's what it is. That's literally what it is, and it's kind of crazy because I just got done talking about Saban and how Saban was this great adapter and he was able to evolve with the changes of college football, and you know continue to find success, because Saban could have easily been in a similar boat where, you know, as college football took some twists and turns, and as it evolved, and as the sport got a little bit more in depth with certain things, Saban, it could have worn Saban a little bit, and some may make the argument that it did, but it never impeded his success. And with a guy like Pete, and with a guy like Belichick, the evolution of the game kind of went past them. And it impeded and it intersected with their lack of success. Granted, Pete, he got to the playoffs last year. He won 9 games this year. So it wasn't like the Seahawks were a dumpster fire. But Pete is supposed to be a defensive guy, and his defenses weren't good. And then with Belichick, more so Belichick, the GM, because his defenses were good, his defenses didn't fall off. But him, his actions and his moves and his ways as the GM impeded on his coaching success, because the offensive talent that is needed to win and be productive in 2023, / 2024, just isn't there. And it hasn't been there for a long time. And that was the situation. So, you know, I think there's a lot of good coaching candidates. Mike Vrabel, obviously, I'm going to talk about him, dive into him. I'm not sure if I'm going to do it on this episode, but I'll probably do it on the next. I'll absolutely do it on the next episode if it's not on this one, right? But that's just how it goes. Sometimes it's time. It doesn't have to be a nasty breakup. You know, there can be divorces where, you know, each partner, They don't have to dislike each other. They don't have to be no hatred. There's not to be a civil war, right? It can just be, you know, it was time. It was time. A mutual, you know, it was time. And it was time, for, I think, for both of these franchises and both of these coaches to move on. So, yeah, as I said, don't want to cram up everything or like all of the breaking news, all of the head coaching stuff into one episode. Feel like I should dedicate multiple episodes to it. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to end this episode off right here. But there'll be like a part two. I'm going to call it that. There'll be like a part two that'll drop following this episode soon after. Like I said, Mike Vrabel, out of Tennessee. So, you know, Titans moved on, whatever. That's a lot, but we're going to get into it. Super wild card weekend. I'll give you guys my predictions and also my top 10 teams going into super wild card weekend. what I expect, my thoughts, my opinions, and so forth. So hope you guys enjoy. Always remember, two choices, one decision. Shouts out to everyone that is listening, supporting, sharing the pod in any form or fashion. Greatly, greatly appreciate it. Don't think I don't. But yeah, like I said, I don't want to jam up or cram up all of the content and like just everything into one. So there'd be a separate episode dedicated to the other stuff that I mentioned. So peace, deuces, I'm out.